It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod. This episode recorded on the 15th of September, 2023, and featuring Napa City Council member Beth Painter. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So let's jump right in. Hot button topics for the city of Napa and residents. And I'm going to lead off with one that never fails to generate a lot of heat, and that's red light cameras.
Red light cameras,
the
sure.
The city yes. council has decided to go back, try this again. There was a previous effort to have red light cameras, and there was a lot of push and pull around that.
That's right.
Yeah. So what motivated going back to a new plan?
Well, so first of all, you're correct. On August 15th, we did vote to move ahead with red light cameras in four intersections. I can give those in a minute or two. You know, the traffic accidents and incidents of injury and death have only continued to climb. And you can't cover just with enforcement in terms of vehicle enforcement. Obviously, our number one goal is to have folks follow the rules of the road. And if you see a light that's yellow, you should slow down and consider stopping. That's not always what happens. And it can result and does result, sadly, in some really significant accidents, sometimes injuries, and sadly, sometimes deaths. I didn't bring the numbers with me, but they have grown since the cameras were eliminated.
Gotcha. And so the four intersections that you've picked out, you and the council, are specifically high danger intersections?
Specifically high danger intersections based on the data that's been collected to look at where we have the biggest problems. Mm-hmm. For those listening, I will tell you those four intersections are Soskal and Imola, mm-hmm. Redwood Road and Solano Ave, Soskal and Lincoln, and SR 29 and Trower.
All make perfect sense to me.
Yeah. So, you know, the goal is not to collect money. The goal is to have folks, like I said, follow the rules of the road and reduce the number of incidents we have in terms of either accidents or fatalities. Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of the collecting money part, part of the complaint about the previous red light cameras was the amount of the fines. And I'm thinking it was between $400 and $500 at that time. What's it going to be now?
You know, the fines are similar. The fines are set by state law. So whether you are pulled over by a patrol officer or you have been cited in a red light camera, the fines are the same. So in that sense, it's not a moneymaker to put the cameras in and collect money because of the technology. It's really to try to slow folks down and follow the rules of the road. Mm-hmm. So the fines, it's not an inexpensive ticket, but the cameras will, we're looking for the drivers, not the vehicles. And the cameras will be able to give you, of course, the license, which brings you to the driver, but there are instances where the driver is not the owner of the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So there will be opportunity to go in and review the footage to make sure that the person behind the wheel is the person that has been cited. And all of those opportunities will continue to exist.
And there'll be an appeal process like before.
100%.
It's all very much the same as the structure previously.
Yes.
Okay, very good.
So timing-wise, just to close the loop on that, the moving forward was approved in August. The contract is in process with the company that's going to install. It'll take probably a good month or so to complete that contract, then installation. So I would look towards the end of the year to have them installed, and you will see information to be telling folks where those intersections are and to slow down.
Sounds good. So I want to talk about the Oxbow District and First Street, but I was just thinking, I want to talk about flood control first, because none of what we see in the Oxbow District would be there today if it wasn't for flood control. I'd like
True
to remind
enough.
People of that once in a while. Voters made a good choice back in the 1998. So let's talk about what's next with the flood control project, because it's not done.
It's not done. That's right. So just as a reminder on flood control, this is a project that, you know, I'll just give you a couple of the stats. Restoring 650 acres of really high value tidal wetland. The project in total will protect about 2,700 homes, 350 businesses, over 500 public properties, protect them from the 100-year flood levels. So that not only reduces insurance costs, but obviously reduces risk of property loss, loss of life, loss of structures. So it's very significant. The next step is to build the flood wall north of the Oxbow all the way up to Lincoln. And that flood wall will also include a component of a river trail. It's a little complicated as you get close to Lincoln. If you're familiar with where the Ace and Vine is, mm-hmm. that building, which has been there for a long time and has, we know, many uses, River City that was there previously, that building is very close to the river, and you cannot build a trail or a wall on the river side of that building. So it's going to have to be on the land side. The rest of the trail, we're hoping, will include a trail adjacent to the river all the way from there down to the River Terrace Inn. Construction on that should begin next year. Flood Control District is now at about a 35% design review for that project, and it will bring a number of more significant numbers of properties out of that 100-year flood level.
Mm-hmm. And what benefit does it provide? Is it specifically those properties along the river, or is it a broader benefit than that?
Well, it's not just properties along the river. The flood map actually extends quite a bit inland. So it's hundreds of properties that will be further protected from physical damage, further protected from getting the extra flood insurance, which is a cost to landowners. So it's not just the properties adjacent to the river.
Yeah. Now, there's a spinoff potential benefit from getting more of that flood project work done in terms of properties along Lincoln that I know the city has been looking at for a long time as housing sites, but currently can't be because of the flood danger there.
That's correct. So there's different ways to potentially try to build within a floodplain area. But if you're in the floodway, construction is virtually impossible. Very, very difficult. So bringing those properties out of that flood zone is going to allow for additional construction. You know, the city's very interested in housing, and being able to move forward with that project will be a huge benefit from the flood project.
Yeah. It's easy to forget that there's still a lot that isn't completed, and we don't have the full project as design is not fully built yet. And I know it's a struggle to go back and get money for the Corps of Engineers, help get money for the Corps of Engineers. Do you feel like there's more success to come after this phase?
Well, the next phase will be south of the Oxbow down towards
Tanneries area.
Tanneries area, mm-hmm. correct. Mm-hmm. And what we've done, and I think the north project, Lincoln down to River Terrace Inn, is a good example. Flood Control District has actually spent the money on the first design phase rather than waiting for the federal dollars, which we know will be coming in. But it shortens that timeline. It runs things concurrently, which I'm a big fan of, trying to do, not necessarily multitask, but try to do two things at one time.
Yeah. All right. Let's segue over to the Oxbow District and First Street, like I mentioned. This is a top of the mind for me because of the proposal that came forward for the Oxbow South, or whatever it's called, the South Gardens, it used to be for Copia, and a development proposal that would do two things that a lot of locals are concerned about, I think, and that's eliminate parking that they currently see as an issue in that district, and then eliminate the public access to what's now known as the Napa Yard at the Oxbow, which of course is a private business, but it's not so much about that particular business, it's the environment there, this open space right along the river, and when I've been there a couple of times, full of families, and we always hear so much from those people with kids, where can we go with our kids? Where can we go as a family? And that's really filled a need, it seems like. So people are concerned about continued development in that First Street corridor where it's already a lot of traffic and a parking jam all the time. It's like everybody's trying to be in that one place at once. and my question is long, and I apologize.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay.
I know you'll be able to elaborate on all this. What makes it more concerning is there are already other multiple projects in some phase of development, hotels and other things that are going to only ramp up that congestion and density there. It's a two-lane street.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah.
That long question, take it and run.
Well, so you're right. The flood project has opened up a lot of opportunity. And what comes with that is also some concern, right, about what is coming next. So what I will tell you about the Oxbow South is that there has been an application filed. It's been designated both in our general plan as a mixed-use site. So the proposal is a mix of residential, probably for-sale residential, commercial, retail restaurants, and hotel. That's a lot. The project right now as it sits is incomplete. So it's not really ready to vet out how we're going to solve what you're talking about in terms of the parking issues. That will be top of mind as we look at any development. It gets into the bigger question that maybe we'll talk about further, which is a bigger picture parking management plan for our entire downtown. That's in the works as well. So the site, Oxbow South, is about 6.7 acres, so it's a lot of land, and a portion of it is adjacent to the river. Very important that that access and trails be included as a part of whatever master planning takes place for Oxbow South, that river access, access for families, open space areas be provided. But I don't think the intention was ever that nothing would happen on that site. It's going to take some work, and it's going to take a lot of input to ensure that parking is addressed properly, public access is addressed properly, and that we find that balance in terms of what is right. You know, housing is a big need, but we want to make sure it's housing for locals. So that's another issue that I think we're going to be needing to look at really closely on that particular project.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a collision between, what's the right way to put it? It's a collision between capitalism and private property rights and the community feeling squeezed, I think. Like there aren't enough public spaces. Maybe I've always felt that Napa was underparked, like there is not enough park space. The tot lots in the neighborhoods are not the same as nice, big, Fuller Park type spaces. And it's too late to recapture that because all the property is privately owned and there's no profit in a park.
No, but I will say we just completed a parks master plan that is, for those who are really interested in looking at it, it's a very comprehensive document that looks at all. We have 54 parks in the city of Napa, and every community looks at how much land you have available in public park based on a per capita basis. We're in really good shape in terms of acreage.
Really?
Where we have to put our efforts, in my opinion, is on maintenance and improvements for the parks that we already have. Playgrounds, sidewalks, other infrastructure. We will be adding bathrooms next step for Alston Park, which has been something that the community's been asking for a long time. Mm-hmm. Alston Park is a very highly used mm-hmm. park for outdoor recreation. And so, I think we have a strong commitment to maintaining, not just maintaining, but improving the parks that we have.
All right. Speaking of parking, as we touched on, and some kind of comprehensive plan, it was also quite a hot button issue a few months ago when the idea of a paid parking plan, a quote unquote return of parking meters downtown, got a lot of people pretty exercised, I would say, for a while. That furor has died down, but what's the status now? Do you think there needs to be, first of all, a paid parking plan?
Well, what I think there needs to be is a parking management plan. And you touched on that earlier with, you know, sort of the concern of more development in Oxbow South, more development elsewhere. I think a part of it is looking at an additional garage. When you look at parking downtown, it's not that we have a parking shortage. I don't think we have managed how people can access our parking correctly. So the very first thing we need to do is ensure that the parking we have is safe, it's well lit, and it's utilized by the people who need to access that parking on a regular basis. And by that I mean employees who are working downtown, residents who are visiting downtown on a regular basis, and of course tourists who are coming here, who primarily, you know, maybe they're staying at a hotel so they have parking covered, maybe they're coming here through Uber or Lyft or otherwise and don't have a vehicle. But all of those needs need to be satisfied in a parking management plan. So will there be a fee associated with that? I think the initial concern or fear was that somehow we're going to bring back and rebuild those old parking meters and you're going to get your quarters back out. That's not the intent. Technology has changed significantly. Anybody who's been to, you know, whether you go to Walnut Creek or San Francisco or elsewhere, there's technologies that will help us manage how folks find a parking place, and if there is a fee associated, that there's a way to pay for it without putting a parking meter in the ground. So if there is a fee associated, I'm hoping that we can work with our downtown businesses so that it's a reduced fee for employees, that it's perhaps a reduced fee for residents, and we look at how to manage it properly. Mm-hmm. What I will tell you is after the initial fear, there have been meetings with the Chamber of Commerce, meeting with the Downtown Association, meetings with the Bicycle Coalition and Slow Down Napa. The interests are really broad. And so we want to hear all those interests before we sort of settle in on a parking management plan. But it's really needed.
Every time this topic comes up, I think about Berkeley, which is densely populated, with the college, of course, being part of that the reasoning. And in many of those neighborhoods and other communities that you're familiar with, there's a permit because you're a local. You can park in certain places, certain yep. times because you live there. And there's a lot of people in Napa who feel that way increasingly with all the events that we have and so on. We've managed it around Bottle Rock by saying no event parking in this neighborhood and so on. But what about a broader idea? I've heard people bring this up. Like, I want to go downtown and patronize businesses, but I don't want to pay to park. Why can't I have a local free permit?
I think that's absolutely a part of the plan, to look at a local preference. I think we need to look at our neighborhoods, yeah. whether it's by permit or by signage or how we're going to do that. And I can't tell you the specific details. What I will tell you is that our staff, city staff, are working really hard to address all of those needs. It will be coming back to council. My guess is probably another month or two. Mm-hmm. So please stay tuned. Please stay involved. I want to hear all those different voices, but we need to manage our parking more strategically.
Excellent. Let's talk about some infrastructural things, and specifically Browns Valley Road, which is in your district. And there's some big changes coming there to the way Browns Valley Road is going to look and be used. Let's talk about that.
I'm really excited about it. In fact, you know, so many of us who live out in Browns Valley have gotten so used to having the road torn up, whether it's because of sewer lines or water lines or, you know, PG&E lines. The good news is that's not going to last forever. And as a part of the planning long term, it's not simply going to be repaved. The road is going to be redesigned to create protected bike lanes. Now, protected bike lanes means that the bikes are not going to be right next to moving vehicles. And to accomplish that, we're going to move the areas where vehicles can park on Browns Valley Road closer towards the center of the road, and bikes will have a protected area between those parked cars and the sidewalk. There'll be some variations along the way, some places where that's not going to work 100%, but it's going to be really exciting. I walk those areas multiple times a week, and I will tell you there's a lot of folks out biking, walking on Browns Valley Road. Mm-hmm. We walk down to Westwood Hills, and having that protected area for cyclists is going to be a game changer.
Yeah.
And the only thing I'll just add to that, if you don't mind, is that we're working on the underpass at under Highway 29. So mm-hmm. connecting that to the underpass is going to only continue that east-west connection for cyclists.
Yeah, which is terrific because you got your north-south going pretty well with the River Trail and the Vine Trail. Very good. Let's spend a moment on the topic of, I guess, what's the best way to put it? We talked about something on the air during the on-the-air portion that I'd like to repeat basically here for the podcast version, and it was having to do with green issues, let's say.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, you know, climate change and sustainability is a really important goal for the city of Napa. And you say, okay, well, you know, obviously the city of Napa is not going to solve climate change, right? But if every community changes habits, large and small, we all do our little piece, whatever that might be for you. If you own a home, it could be retrofitting things that rely on fossil fuels, like a gas water heater, or buying an electric vehicle. And retrofitting existing buildings is a piece of that. So there are rebates available from a number of different organizations. One is called BAYREN, B-A-Y-R-E-N. They have various rebates for both single family and multifamily, MCE, PG&E, to make those changes that not only reduces our reliance on fossil fuels, but ultimately is going to reduce the utility bill for the tenant living in that unit. Both really, really important. So the city of Napa is hosting an open house at the Napa Library, October 18th, 4 to 6 p.m., where we're going to bring those resources of all these various rebates to the table, literally. They'll each have a table, so that either owners or tenants in multifamily buildings can understand the rebates that are out there and make use of them. Some of the rebates are, you know, require a little bit of additional cash in, so I call that low cost. Some are no cost, so it's a good time to be looking at making those changes.
Mm-hmm. And is this a program property owners need to apply for, or will the city be reaching out to specific targeted properties?
No, the property owner needs to apply. So they are the applicant, and there are a few programs that are available for tenants. I mean, depending on the building, if you own your own water heater as a tenant, you know, you may be able to do that. Cooktops, you know, there's a lot of folks who are really interested in changing out from a gas cooktop to an induction cooktop. Mm-hmm. And if you're the owner of that appliance, then you as a tenant could apply as well.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to take away my gas stove, are you?
Not taking it away yet.
Intrusive government taking all my things. I was shocked by the reaction to that national level, not locally, but people just lost their minds over that subject without really understanding what's behind it. There's not only the fossil fuel consumption, but this emissions issue that is happening inside your home.
Yeah.
And said, no, don't take my gas stove. Well, but the fact that it's poisoning your children, do you care about that?
Yeah. No, yeah. It's serious. And honestly, if you really want to look at trying to break that chain of reliance on fossil fuels, I'd look at your water heater before I look at your gas stove.
Yeah.
You know, you're using your water heater many more hours on a daily basis than a gas stove, at least for me.
Yeah, and the on-demand water heater is something many people should consider. Think about how it works. You're heating, 200 gallons of water constantly, and yet you only use hot water two or three times a day for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Think about that. Yeah. But you're keeping it warm. It's like there's a fire burning and you got a big kettle of water 24 hours a day.
Yeah. So if I could make one quick suggestion, and that is, you know, it's pretty typical that the way a water heater gets replaced is when it fails. Mm-hmm. And it fails in the morning and you need to give your kids a bath at the end of the day and you want a water heater that day. Mm-hmm. So I would just say, take a look at the age of your water heater. If it's 7-10 years old, think about it now. There are rebates out there that will help you make that change before it becomes a crisis.
It's a great bit of advice. And the cost of replacing a water heater that way versus the emergency call on the weekend to the plumber?
Yeah.
Think about that.
Yeah.
Right? Sure. Okay, very smart. Good advice. Beth Painter, Napa City Council member in the Berry Pod. Great conversation, lots of topics, all important. Thank you for being on the show.
It was a pleasure.
This is the Berry Pod, recorded on the 15th of September, 2023.
You're listening to The Berry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.